Welcome to News Tribune on Tap. I'm Gary Caster, managing editor at the Jefferson City News Tribune and host of News Tribune on Tap, a weekly conversation about news and issues in Jefferson City that matter to you. Today's special guest is Drew Button. Hello, Drew.
Hello. How are you?
I'm doing well. So Drew is director of the Department of Natural Resources, and he's here. We're going to talk first of all about the drought. We've had a little bit of rain recently, but Missouri's still deeply in an extreme drought, yes?
Yes, and we have been in varying degrees for about the past year. We had some rainfall over the winter months that caused us to have some optimism in February, but really since that time, we just haven't seen the amount of rainfall consistently across the state that we would typically see at this time of the year.
Yeah. I mean, I look at my yard and I can see the grass is brown now, and it's an issue for me, but that's a minor issue compared to how serious the drought is across the state.
Yeah, certainly. And a lot of the impacts that we tend to see early on in a drought, or those that are impacted the first, tend to be agricultural producers for obvious reasons, particularly in the livestock sector. You know, when you start to see drought significant enough that ponds are drying out and fields are not getting enough moisture to produce the amount of hay that those producers are anticipating. Fortunately, we're not seeing the kind of drinking water supply issues that we saw, for example, in the 2018 drought. But we're early yet in the year to be in this kind of drought condition. So a lot of the focus right now is on those agricultural impacts and anything that the state can do to assist with easing those impacts. But longer term, we also are looking at water supply and commercial navigation and all of the other ways in which the river impacts it beyond, you know, our personal properties and yards and things like that.
Yeah. Well, and you're right. I mean, there are short-term consequences and long-term consequences that this drought will inflict upon Missourians.
Correct.
So on June 1st, DNR released its mitigation and response plan. What did DNR, the state, lay out as far as the plan going forward?
Well, really, our response plan had remained largely the same for the past 20 years. And in terms of responding with resources during a drought, we continue to do that. But really, what the new plan envisioned is more what you were describing of the long-term implications. Mm-hmm. We had a significant drought in 2012, 2018, 2022, and here we are in 2023. And so we wanted to move from a reactive position to more of a proactive position. What are things that we can pursue now that in the next drought will provide some benefit? So think of things like pond cleanout programs, not going to provide any assistance to that landowner in the current drought until it rains, but in a next drought, with looking at taking some of the silt that has reduced storage in those ponds, can provide a benefit in the long term. So the new plan is really much more forward thinking in that way. And fortuitously, we'd spent the last few years working on this, and it was really an outgrowth of the state water resource plan update that was finalized a couple of years ago. And that was endorsed by the General Assembly. And one of the recommendations was to create a mitigation and response plan for drought. And that was finalized, and it looks at different regions of the state, because the impacts of drought are very different in northern Missouri than they are in southern Missouri. In northern Missouri, we're very reliant upon surface water reservoirs and much more reliant on groundwater and wells south of the Missouri River. And so really, we were trying to look at what are the ways that drought impacts and manifests itself in these different regions of the state, and what are some potential ranges of mitigation opportunities that we could be looking at putting into place to make our communities and landowners more resilient to the impacts of the droughts that we're seeing.
Okay. So here in mid-Missouri, for those farmers here in mid-Missouri, what would that look like?
You know, I mentioned the pond cleanout program, but there are also things that the State Soil and Water Commission has done, opening up areas that they have funded practices such as cover crops for soil stability and soil health, allowing some easing of requirements, allowing producers to hay okay those areas to provide a source of forage given the impacts of the drought. You know, there are the practices that we've done a lot over the years, particularly in the 2012 drought, where livestock producers can implement grazing management plans and be provided cost share assistance from the state soil and water conservation program to drill wells and put in those grazing management systems to have a watering source for their livestock. So there are a number of those types of tools. You know, there are conservation measures that are recommended to communities that start to see concerns about water supply. So it can really run a range of things depending on, is it a heavy livestock producing region of the state? Is it row crop? You know, what are the types of things that could be put into place to provide those tools for not only agricultural producers, but communities as well.
So what are you hearing from the agricultural community right now as far as their response to the plan that you put forward, as well as just the general nature of the drought?
Well, I would say that plan was created with the involvement of a multitude of stakeholders, whether it be from the navigation industry or the state agencies or the commodity groups and the agricultural advocacy groups. And so I think we see broad support and I think appreciation for the measures that the governor announced last week in terms of opening up areas, ponds and lakes in state parks and conservation areas where people, if they're in that kind of dire situation, can at least go and pump and haul that water. But also opening up, I think there are roughly 700 acres at 17 different state parks where there would be opportunities for landowners or livestock producers to go in and hay some of those areas. The concern is about water supply for livestock and that forcing decisions for cattlemen, you know, having to sell off earlier than they would like. And so we're trying to do anything we can to ease those conditions. But I hear about concerns about the lack of water sources for animals. I hear concerns about uneven rainfall, where we get it, and the impact on row crop farmers, and really a concern about hay and the access and cost and supply of that hay.
Yeah, the hay immediately comes to mind for me. We had a story in Sunday's paper about the challenges with hay right now, and we'll put a link in our show notes to that story, but a lot of farmers are burning through their hay right now because they have no pasture to graze on. And so I found it interesting how my family has some farms throughout the state, and that idea of how long it takes to develop a herd, that this could really set some of them back.
Yeah. And our partners at the Missouri Department of Agriculture are really trying to, through their hay directory, be a source of information about where there is some supply. But as you might imagine, that changes very frequently. And we're trying to really provide that information and help facilitate that exchange. But that is one of the significant concerns, is what does that hay supply look like in the longer term, absent some easing of the drought conditions?
Yeah. Well, and you mentioned navigable water. I mean, obviously Jefferson City has a navigable water body that goes by it. What effect do we see this having on the Missouri River?
The flows in the Missouri River are largely determined by releases from the federal reservoirs up in the Dakotas and Montana. And they're in drought as well. And so the reservoirs are low. And so we're already seeing some reduction in releases from those core reservoirs. And we anticipate shortening of the navigation season. And so that remains a concern because the reservoirs are low as well. And so I think absent some change in the current trajectory, we anticipate further reductions of those releases. And that has implications not only for navigation on the Missouri River, but at times of lower flow, up to 60%+ of the water in the Mississippi River between the confluence north of St. Louis and the confluence with the Ohio down in southeast Missouri, up to 60%, 70% of that flow can be coming from the Missouri River. Mm. And we saw last year impacts on the Mississippi River, areas that were shut down to navigation. And so we're concerned about that as well, and continue to monitor that along with our counterparts at the Department of Transportation to understand how we can also be considering and looking at easing those impacts as well.
Yeah. So what is the typical navigation season
Okay. On the Missouri River, it typically goes into the first part of December. Last year, because of drought and the volume of water in the reservoirs, they had an early end to that season, so it ended in November.
Okay.
And then in the winter, the Corps goes on lower amount schedule of releases. And so we saw some impacts in Nebraska this past year in the winter because the river was so low and we had these brutally cold temperatures that came in and caused the entire river to freeze up. And there were power suppliers in Nebraska that had real concerns about whether their intakes were going to be able to draw cooling water. So it has many long-term implications when you think about not only the navigation impacts, but potentially the longer-term power cooling when we get in the winter months.
Yeah. Well, Drew, let's switch to a cheerier topic here. I'm getting depressed here. Let's talk about the $200 million or so that your department's going to have to invest in the state park system.
Yeah, I'm really happy to talk about that because I think these things have happened over the last couple of years, but I don't think even supporters of the park system realize kind of the level of investment that is occurring right now in our state parks infrastructure. We, of course, have 92 state parks and historic sites, largely supported by the Parks and Soil Sales Tax that has been so thankfully and generously supported by Missouri voters. But we also have a number of concession opportunities that also, you know, in the lodging in some of the larger parks, we have concession contracts that also provide revenue. What happened last legislative session is the governor proposed and the legislature approved the issuance of over $60 million in revenue bonds that will fund improvements in 22 state parks. And so as the name would imply, these are projects that will ultimately generate revenue. So things like extension of full service campground loops or conversion to basic campground loops to provide electric, water, and sewer, and things like new lodges at Johnson Shut-In State Park, camper cabins at a number of different locations, a yurt village at Table Rock State Park. So really a lot of new amenities. During the course of the pandemic, we saw record visitation at our state park system. And it has really, I think, provided a level of support that we have always enjoyed support from Missourians, but I think an appreciation for the amenity that we have. You know, we're only one of, I think, six or seven states in the country that doesn't charge entrance fees as to our state park system. So the revenue bonds were something that are really going to allow us to provide some of the lodging opportunities that our visitors are demanding. But we have over $81 million in capital improvement projects that are underway or in design at virtually every park and historic site across the state. And also this past session in the ARPA funding that the legislature approved, they included nearly $41 million for wastewater and drinking water upgrades to make sure that our basic infrastructure has the capacity to manage all of the visitors that we're seeing.
Sure.
And really, not unlike communities across the state, we had aging infrastructure that was in need of attention. And this really is providing us an opportunity to do both the capacity improvement for our visitors and amenities, but also to deal with the basic infrastructure. And then this past legislative session, the legislature also approved nearly $40 million in additional capital improvement projects. And those are, of course, under the governor's consideration right now as he considers the budget. But if all of those things are totaled together, it's $220 million plus dollars of investment going on in our state park system. The only time where we would think of comparable investment in the state park system would have been in the Civilian Conservation Corps era, when a great number of the structures that exist in our state parks were constructed during that era.
Yeah. Wow. As a parks user, what am I going to see here in Mid-Missouri?
Yes. So I think a new campground loop at Finger Lakes State Park. I think, you know, a Thousand Hills State Park, there'll be new cabins that will be developed there. So I think a lot of what you will see, if you have an RV, I think there'll be many more slots available if you're interested in full service hookup, electric, sewer, and water. We've seen increasing demand for that. Mm-hmm. And this will allow people that have trouble getting in when they want to, to be able to have more sites to choose from.
Yeah, I can park my tent then.
Yeah.
So what's the timeline for these projects to get started and to be completed?
Well, I think one of the first projects to break ground is a new campground loop, full service camping loop at Montauk State Park. Mm. So I think there are a handful that are beginning right now, but it really will occur in phases over the next 5 years. And that is the period of time that I would envision these. But there will be projects happening at virtually every state park.
Yeah. Well, and some of the parks are new, basically new developments.
Yeah. So last year we opened Bryant Creek State Park, which is down in Osage, Douglas County area. And so last year the legislature included appropriations authority for phase one of Bryant Creek development. They, in the budget this year, appropriated funding from the state park sales tax to do phase two of that, mm-hmm. as well as phase one of Shepherd of the Hills State Park, which is another new state park that I envision opening in the next year or two near Branson. Mm-hmm. So yes, there's funding that the legislature has included for those projects, and that's separate and aside from the funding that I was talking about in capital improvements. These are just some of the initial, like, trail development. And
sure.
Bryant Creek will have equestrian trails in phase two of that. And so things like that, there will be unique opportunities that will be newly available in our state park system that people will get to see and experience over the next few years.
Great. So here in mid-Missouri, there's often a lot of interest on the Rock Island Trail. Is there any kind of update on it?
Yeah, so a number of the communities have received grant awards and are moving forward with developing the trail through their communities. Mm-hmm. And so some of those are Owensville and Bell and Eldon and Versailles. And so that will be happening. And, you know, of course, there are 47 miles of the Rock Island Trail that are already open and developed. So we will look forward to partnering with those communities and then look at, once those are developed, what are some of the opportunities to perhaps connect some of those areas. Mm-hmm. But right now we're focused on partnering with those communities to develop the portions that they're very eager to develop through their communities.
All right. So this question here is a trick question here for you, Drew. So much like you never want to tell which child is your favorite, what's your favorite state park?
Depends on what I'm wanting to do.
Right.
You know, I enjoy the Katy Trail. Yeah. I like to get on my bicycle, and I like, particularly my wife and I lived in Roachport for a time, and mm-hmm. the area that goes right along the river. I've also had an interest in large river management throughout the course of my career. So that kind of intersects two of the things. But it depends on what you want to do. You know, we have so many opportunities. I had the good fortune of being able to go down to Confluence State Park to announce a kind of the final gift from the estate of Pat Jones, mm-hmm. who, you know, Ted and Pat Jones were huge supporters of the Katy Trail. Mm-hmm. And kind of in Pat Jones' final gift to the state was funding from her estate to create a new trail along the levee at Confluence Point State Park that will ride along the Mississippi River and allow you to go right down to the confluence and stick 1 foot in the Mississippi and 1 foot the Missouri. But, you know, if you like hiking, Hahn State Park and the beautiful trails that exist there, if you like canoeing, Echo Bluff or Current River State Park right on the banks of the Current River, there's so many opportunities. It's really just only limited by your imagination. I will not say my favorite. I love them all. It just depends on what I'm interested in doing that day.
All right. Very safe. Well, Drew, thanks for joining us today.
All right. Thank you. I appreciate the interest.
Thanks for listening. You can find News Tribune on tap at newstribune.com, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Google Play.